I had a good hour and a half or so discussion with the Productivity Commission. We had some clarifying questions regarding the cost to make things here, free trade agreements. It was a wide-ranging discussion. I think many of you were in the room. And, you know, there's no decision been made.
That is Holden's Managing Director, Mike Devereaux. He was speaking earlier today, shortly after he gave evidence to a Productivity Commission inquiry in Melbourne. And he insisted that no decision has been made on an end date for local manufacturing in Holden. Wouldn't comment on suggestions that the company needs $150 million more per year in assistance in order to stay in Australia. And car makers in Australia receive taxpayer subsidies amounting to $2,500 per car, about $50,000 per employee. Is there an argument for paying more? Certainly that's the argument that the opposition is making. Let's see if we can get an economist to tell us. I'm joined by Dr. Remy Davison, who's a political economist with Monash University. He's researched Australian government's subsidies to the car industry, and he joins us now. Remy, who's right? Who's wrong? Just solve the problem for us.
I'll try for you, Waleed. Well, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, the automotive manufacturing industry delivers an awful lot in terms of the manufacturing industry as a whole. So essentially Australians put in about $500 million a year, and the outcome is about $21 billion or so in addition to Australian GDP. It adds about 50,000 jobs directly. And I heard you had Tanya Plibersek on a little bit earlier, and she quoted a figure of about up to 200,000 jobs affected if the automotive industry disappeared. Well, that could be right, because, of course, it's not just the 50,000 direct jobs, it's also the spillover into other industries, such as the steel industry, the aluminium industry, and so on.
Right, but at the same time, those jobs could be redirected, or they could move into other sorts of areas, couldn't they? I mean, I was reading some analysis today that was interesting. It made the point that if you got rid of the car industry in Australia, the local manufacturing industry, what that would do is you'd remove tariffs then on foreign cars coming into Australia, so more foreign cars could come in the market more cheaply, and that would then provide an opportunity for parts manufacturers here perhaps to sell to car manufacturers overseas their components, as they're currently doing, and as they're hoping they'll be able to do more under the free trade agreement with South Korea, for example, and so those jobs might actually grow. So is there a way to assess what the downside and the upside is actually going to be?
No, I mean, we can only make projections on this, but on your point about the imported vehicles taking up the slack, that wouldn't really happen, because essentially what happens is the automotive manufacturing, the parts industry, derives its scale economies and its scale efficiencies from supplying in volume to the local manufacturers. So at the moment, we have Ford who's departing in 2016, we have Holden and Toyota, and once you hollow out the industry, there won't be the kind of volumes available for local manufacturers to do that. And essentially, when you're talking about imported vehicles, well, and with free trade agreements, such as with Korea and the United States and so on, and probably with a few more down the track as well, we already have Thailand and Singapore having been in place for a few years now, then you're going to see parts being imported duty-free, for example. There won't be the incentive to manufacture them here. So the point is that, you know, the automotive industry has pretty specific skills, and they're not necessarily readily transferable to other sectors of the manufacturing economy.
Right, but would they disappear altogether? I mean, is there adaptation going on?
Many of them would. I mean, there has been some academic research done on this where workers have been tracked after they've lost jobs in the automotive industry, and maybe only a third regain jobs of that are comparable. The other two-thirds might be, you know, either looking for work or find work in non-associated industries.
And what if we redirected the money that we're currently spending on the car industry to invest in the creation of other jobs?
Well, at the moment, I mean, it's a relatively small amount. I mean, if we're talking about $500 million a year in terms of government funding, that's pretty small compared to what other countries are giving their automotive industries. It works out to about $18 per capita in Australia. When you compare that with Germany, about $90, and the United States, about $96 per head, it's actually a fairly small amount. And what are you redirected into? I mean, is government going to set up industries? Is it going to set up businesses? What is it going to do?
Or maybe high-end manufacturing or something.
sure, but the big problem is, and both sides of politics over many decades are to blame for this, they've had no transition plan. They've progressively reduced tariffs, they've restructured the industry, but they haven't thought about the future, what kinds of jobs Australians are going to be doing in the 21st century. I mean, the fact is we are largely a services-based economy. We've now got amongst the smallest manufacturing sector in the OECD. And the biggest growth sector of the Australian economy is in personal services, and that means everything from hairdressers to somebody mowing your lawn.
Well, I wonder if it's this transition plan that might be the answer to Joe Hockey's question that I'm about to play you. He was, well, fairly forthright, I think we can say, in Parliament today, talking about the amount of money that has gone to the car industry so far. Here's what he said.
There is no shortage of money that has been going to the motor manufacturing industry. And if all those assistance measures have worked so well in the past, why have Ford and Mitsubishi left Australia?
What do you think about that, Remy?
Well, these are commercial decisions that were made, of course, previously by Nissan in the 1990s, Mitsubishi more recently, and Ford just this year, in terms of having a viable market in Australia. It's certainly true that Australia has been focused towards its small domestic market and not so much export geared. And that has meant that obviously there's going to be diminishing profits, diminishing returns to scale. I think Joe Hockey's being maybe a little bit economical with the truth there, that you can also see that other industries have been heavily subsidised, albeit perhaps they're more successful for various other reasons. If you look at the kind of rebates and tax deductions that are given to the mining industry, or dare I say it, the subsidies given to the ABC to fund the high salaries of presenters. but I don't hear anybody complaining about that too much.
Well, I suppose the difference there with the ABC example, and obviously there's a declared interest here, but is that they're funding a direct service. They know exactly what they're getting. It's not funding to try to keep something afloat that is otherwise struggling. It's there to create something that otherwise would not exist that the country specifically wants and needs.
Yeah, that's quite true. I mean, and that's true whether we're talking about the auto industry or the ABC, for that matter, even though they're obviously in quite different sectors. But as far as the automotive industry is concerned, there are obvious spin-off effects. There is the GDP, the multiplier effect that you get throughout a range of industries. And if you lose 50,000 jobs out of that sector or something like that or more than that, then that's 50,000 or 90,000 or maybe 150,000 pay packets that aren't going to be spent anymore.
The point you make about the subsidy to other industries was made today by the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union spokesman Dave Smith. Here's what he said.
You know, I bet the average punter out there wouldn't know that mining and banking and finance receive far more assistance and indirect assistance from the government than what the automotive industry ever does. That's accepted. Agriculture, the same. That's accepted. But when it comes to the automotive industry, it seems to be, you know, the whipping boy.
I see the point he's making. I suppose it comes down then to a question of return on investment, doesn't it, Remy? What gives the greater return on investment?
Sorry, what gives a bigger return on investment? Which industry do you mean?
Well, say the subsidies to the mining industry, for example. We're giving a lot of money to it, but it also generates a lot of money. So how do you assess what the better return is?
Oh, clearly that's the case. But as far as the returns on the mining industry is concerned, mining is a very big employer. It provides around 10% of GDP. But at the same time, manufacturing provides a lot of longer-term reasonably well-paying jobs and a lot more of them as well. So you're talking about throughout the manufacturing industry in Australia, around a million jobs. And if you start hollowing out that industrial base, if you experience a phase of deindustrialisation, much as Britain did, for example, in the late 70s when British Leyland collapsed, then what you see are rust belts and you see the decimation of various towns and regions. We will see it most obviously in Victoria if we do see Holden depart, and ultimately Toyota is also in Altona. They invested $500 million in 1992. That was engineered by Keating in 92, where they built the Altona plant. But if those companies go, then we see 28,000 jobs directly go in Victoria. We see about 6,000 or 7,000 go in New South Wales. We see 7,000 go in Queensland, a few thousand in WA, and a few hundred in Tasmania.
I'm about to speak to the UK, where they're looking to invest in developing a driverless car. Is part of the problem here for Australia that we're putting money in the industry, but not necessarily getting a return of development of cars that are innovative that people want to buy?
Well, it doesn't just apply to the car industry. I think there's always the great story of the 90s with Ralph Sarek, the Australian engineer, who developed the orbital engine, and Sarek really couldn't get any interest here in Australia, and the government at the last minute even offered to pay him rather a lot of money to stay in Australia, but he didn't. He went to Wall Street, got his money, and turned it into a $1 billion corporation, and he sells that technology into Chinese and American automotive corporations now. So it's about offshoring the kinds of technologies that Australians are actually extremely good at doing from an engineering viewpoint.
Good to talk to you, Remy. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ollie.
Dr. Remy Davidson, who's the Jean Monnet Chair in Politics and Economics at Monash University.